HVL proudly presents an exclusive and astonishingly private look at Joffrey Lupul's independent medical examination.
Yes, Joffrey. My name is Dr. Bolton. I am the doctor appointed independently by the NHL to go through your second physical examination. Tell me, how have you been feeling lately?
Dude, I feel great. I snowboard all the time. I feel awesome. I feel 100%. I look 100%. And I just can't wait to play in the NHL with my Toronto Maple Leafs, man.
That's wonderful. You know, if we can get you that clean bill of health, you'll be in the NHL in no time.
Oh my God, I can't wait. I've been waiting for this moment for so long.
Okay, just going to run some tests here. Yeah, as I mentioned, Joffrey, I was appointed by the NHL as an independent physician. You know, speaking of the NHL, Brendan Shanahan used to work for the NHL, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he's still got a lot of friends there.
I guess, yeah, he does.
And a lot of friends can go a long way in this business.
Why is that music playing? What are you doing, Doc? Ow, that kind of hurts. My leg's there. You gotta do that. Not my face. Not my face. Oh, my face. Oh, my beautiful face. My beautiful face.
Lou Lamoriello sends his regards. Hey, Ari.
Yeah, what's going on?
Is it safe?
Let me tell you something. I think you just scared a lot of children. just with your Dr. Bolton. It's like some kind of madman. You're like an evil genius in the waiting.
Yeah,
in the wings.
Poor Joffrey. All he wants to do is play hockey or snowboard and earn $5.2 million a year. That's all he wants to do.
Oh, man. Tough life, eh?
Yeah.
I'll tell you, though, he's probably sitting somewhere. Where do you think he is, by the way? He's looking at this night, this opening night, and thinking, this is brutal. I want to be there.
But the question I have is, how bad could his injuries be that he can't play hockey in the NHL, but he can snowboard? You know, that puts a lot of stress on your core, on your back, on your legs. What kind of injury does he have? Why can't the NHL disclose that?
Don't you think it really says something, too, that this team deemed him not worthy enough to compete on their roster? That's a slap in the face for a guy who once upon a time was a 30-goal point-per-game player, right?
It is a slap in the face, but it's also a very good indication for yourself and other Leafs fans is to show how deep they are at forward, that they don't need a guy who, you know, in his prime was a good 60-point-plus guy.
And I'm thinking, what's going to happen tonight as a result? I mean, are you expecting a big scoring game, high scoring game against the Jets?
I am, and I hope there is a high scoring game against the Jets because, as you know, Patrick Laine's on my fantasy team.
Oh, man, what a beast.
Sweet Willie Nylander's on my fantasy team, and Moving Morgan Riley, I don't know, that's his nickname, I guess now, is also.
Worst nickname ever.
Is also on my fantasy team.
If you're the one giving nicknames this year, I think the Leafs are in big trouble.
You don't like Sweet Willie or Moving Morgan?
I'd like to see Morgan Riley take a step forward. That's the big thing. I think fans are going to put huge expectations on his shoulders. Media's doing it, too.
Yeah, I heard some good things, encouraging things for Leafs fans and encouraging things for people who have him on their fantasy team, and that's they're expecting 40-plus points from Morgan. And I don't see why that can't happen. He's going to be on the number one wave on the power play. The Leafs are expected to be a high-flying firepower bunch. So, yeah, I don't see why Morgan cannot get 40 points this year.
And of course, later on in the show, we've got our friend Omar White from A Winning Habit who's going to come on and talk more about tonight's game. But come on, man, this is great. Like, we're feeling good. This is hockey. Hockey's finally back. It's hard to believe that tonight the puck is going to drop. And for millions of hockey fans across North America, it's like this huge sigh, like, thank God the preseason's over. How much longer can that go?
Oh, yeah. And especially for both of us whose teams were eliminated in April. You know, we've been without following our teams for 6 months. That's a long time, especially considering the hockey season sometimes lasts close to 10 months out of the year. So, yeah, I'm
big
really
time,
excited.
Big time. And to think how many months you had to spend listening to me talk about Blue Jays baseball, that alone probably rotted your brain.
You can't take anymore. Yeah, are you ever going to own up to the 37 homer, 120 RBI, 280 batting average prediction for Jose Bautista? Are you ever going to own up to that? No? Are you? No?
You know, you had to do it. You had to go there. You had to go to Jose Bautista on a night where we should be celebrating the majesty of hockey. Speaking of the majesty of hockey, are you noticing anything different in the way the media is portraying our teams? I mean, I know that there are pressures and there are big hockey markets, but is it me or does the scrutiny seem to be going through the roof with every little thing being magnified? This is going to be a tough year for players on both teams, don't you think?
I think so. I mean, I think there's more scrutiny on the Montreal Canadiens side for sure, not just because of the French and English media, but just because of the expectations that are, you know, being thrown upon the shoulders of the Montreal Canadiens, not only the team, but also on Marc Bergevin's shoulders. You know, he has molded this team to how he wants it to look, apparently. So yeah, there's a lot of expectations there, whereas the expectations for the Maple Leafs are more growth expectations. You know, such a young core led by, you know, some great young superstars. So those, it's not necessarily scrutiny. It's hope. It's more hope on the Leafs side, whereas Montreal has more of the critical eyes looking upon them versus, you know, hopeful eyes.
What happens if either team gets off to a rough start? Like, let's say, for example, one of our teams goes 2-8 to start the season. Is it me, or are we going to have to duck and cover from all the shrapnel that'll be coming from every direction?
I think it'll be coming from the East, and that East is Montreal. Again, if the Leafs get off to a 2-8 start, you've got it's a gimme year. It'll be they're still young and growing. I don't think it'll happen. But if it does, it's they're young and growing. For Montreal, coming off a 2-6 preseason to come to a 2-8 first 10 games of the season, that'd really be tough on the team. And because fans were critical about Marc Bergevin's moves and how he's built this team, and if that happens, oh man, it will really hit the fan.
No doubt. And what's great now is that with the season in full force, we are going to have more and more Habs fan versus Leafs fan for our listeners, more shows, more phone-in opportunities, prizes. This is amazing. This is like a jamboree. This is a bonanza. If you're a Habs fan or a Leafs fan, you've got to pay attention to what we're doing this year.
Oh, I completely agree. It's going to be amazing. We're going to have a lot of good stuff, a lot of interactions with our fans, and hopefully both our teams will be able to capture the spotlight in good ways.
Except for the fact that we know that only one team can truly hog the spotlight, and that's where you and I are going to be needling each other, going at each other all year for fans to appreciate the good, the bad, and the ugly, I'm sure.
Yeah, and hopefully there's a lot of ugly on your side.
Well, I got news for you. I'm so pretty now, my team, with William Nylander. Wee Willie, what'd you call him again? Wee Willie Nylander? I prefer to call him the franchise.
I think I called him Pretty Willie the other day when I drafted him.
Well, you know, he's kind of deserving of that name, but I got to ask you this. I noticed something pop up on my score app. Willie Nylander is not going to negotiate a contract during the year. Who does he think he is, Edwin Encarnacion? What do you think of that?
that could be something big because
I'm worried.
If Willie Nylander scores 30-plus, 35 goals, which a lot of people expect him to, that's a good thing for the Maple Leafs, but also a bad thing at the same time, because he'll be able to command, you know, I don't think it'll be far-fetched for him to ask for 6 years, $42 million.
Eichel money? Eichel money is what you're talking about, sounds
Eichel
like.
Eichel was an 8 times $80
million. 80, right?
$80 million over 8. But Nicholas Ehlers just signed a 6 times 7, and I don't think it'd be far-fetched. I mean, if Sweet Willie gets 30-plus goals, I think he may be even to ask 6 times 8. So good for the Leafs that, yes, he can perform during the season, but bad for them moving forward because that's going to put a lot of stress on their salary cap.
Well, I can't wait for the stress you'll put on our salary cap when you try to renegotiate your contract for Habs fan versus Leafs fan season 3.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Toronto Maple Leafs, I believe, will make the playoffs. I don't think they'll be moving backwards. I think they'll be moving forwards, and I think they will take second in the Atlantic Division.
Wow.
With 101 points.
Holy moly.
Oh, God, did I just say that?
Slap me silly and throw me out the window, because I never thought in all my years that I would ever see a 100-point prediction from you. But it's warranted. Don't get me wrong. What about the Habs?
Well, talent and coaching. I think that'll really, really help the Leafs. Well, but the Habs, I think that they will make the playoffs. A lot of people are saying that they won't. I think they will make the playoffs, and I think they will grab the... I'm going to go with the wild card. 97-point season for the Montreal Canadiens.
Very cool. And I'm going to go with 103 points for the Montreal Canadiens. Why? Because I think they're going to surprise the heck out of a lot of people. Even with all their troubles, you've got some ridiculously good players on your team. And as long as you have the best goaltender in the league, which incidentally I drafted when in my hockey pool, which you're more than familiar with, I think your team's going to do a lot better than most people think. For the Leafs, I'm also expecting 100-plus points, but the truth is, if they don't make it, I won't be surprised. This is a tough year. This is a sophomore year. You and I talked about it all year last year and for our first six shows for HVL Season 2. The sophomore jinx is still a menace that can hit them at any time, and I'm worried whether or not this young group will be able to get over the hump collectively.
So the Montreal Canadiens regular season is about to start, and I want to talk about three keys to success for the Montreal Canadiens without mentioning Carey Price. The power play is going to be huge this year, and it's going to look very different. The Montreal Canadiens are throwing out four forwards and one defenseman on the first wave of the power play. The four forwards, Joanne, Pacioretty, Galchenyuk, and Hemsky, with Weber on the point. Now we all know what Weber can do on the point with his huge shot, but adding Joanne to the mix really changes it up. With him constantly moving, he's adding an option that the Montreal Canadiens really didn't have. He's opening up lanes for his wingers, opening up lanes for his point man. Also, having Pacioretty and Galchenyuk provides two other shooting options. Pacioretty's got a great shot, Galchenyuk's got a great shot, Hemsky as well. Hemsky can provide actually another passing option. He's a great setup man, actually. Now, he's a little past his prime, but being on the power play and having those other players to support him, he won't stand out as much. It's actually going to be pretty good. And with the NHL cracking down on infractions the way they are, this power play is going to be huge for Montreal. If they can provide 1 to 1.5 goals, or maybe even 2 goals per game, that's a lot of support for their goaltender. The second unit looks pretty good as well. Now, another key to success for the Montreal Canadiens this season is their third line. It's really a kind of a blurring of the lines, pardon the pun, between the second, third, and fourth line, but the Pulkanets, Lehkonen, and Charles Houdon line can actually provide some extra offense for the Montreal Canadiens, some much-needed offense. Arturi Lehkonen, coming off an 18-goal rookie season, can actually... there's a good chance that he's going to get 20 goals this year. Charles Houdon, if he can provide 15 goals for the Montreal Canadiens, that's a huge bonus. But having Lehkonen and Houdon playing with Pulkanets will actually be able to boost Pulkanets' offensive output. He's not going to get the 20 that he used to get year in and year out, but if he can get back up to 15 to 18 goals, again, that's huge. The last key to success for the Montreal Canadiens this season isn't even in a Montreal Canadiens uniform, let alone is this person or persons part of the organization. That key is the $8.5 million in cap space that Marc Bergevin has. If Bergevin can use that money wisely, Montreal might be adding a key piece or two to their lineup. And that key piece could provide extra offense or defensive help or any other depth to this lineup to make them a much stronger contender in the Eastern Conference. It really is only one or two pieces away for the Montreal Canadiens to really call themselves true contenders. And if Bergevin can use that money wisely, Montreal might be going places this year.
So here we are, opening night in the NHL, and the Toronto Maple Leafs are getting ready to take on the Winnipeg Jets to start what will be a campaign of absolutely insane expectations. And whether or not you get your news from the mainstream media, or fan-sided, SB Nation, even The Athletic, what it comes down to is whether or not this team will be able to live up to all of these incredible expectations put upon their shoulders. And that legitimately worries me, because these are young players for the most part. I mean, if you throw out Patrick Marleau and some of the veteran leadership provided by the Matt Martins and Dominic Moores of the world, what you've got is a Mike Babcock-led team that is completely buying into his system, for better and for worse. And what I mean by that is, if things start to go sour, we know a lot of emphasis will be placed on the young guys. Between Matthews, Marner, and Nylander, the expectations placed on their shoulders will truly be on a level not seen in the NHL for quite some time. If Patrick Laine comes into town this evening and ends up scoring 4 goals against the Maple Leafs, or Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid begin upstaging these young players when the Edmonton Oilers play them, it's amazing to think how quickly quickly the media will turn on this team. Right now, it's a love fest. When you've got Teflon man Mike Babcock behind the bench, you're pretty much assured that these Maple Leafs are going to be given a mulligan. This is their free roll. This is their equivalent in poker of going all in, knowing full well that they can rebuy. Meanwhile, across the province in Quebec and Montreal, you've got a Habs team that is really walking on eggshells, hoping that they get off to a strong start to deflect the fact that they've got some serious systemic issues. The Maple Leafs, on the other hand, even with the huge hole on D and the lack of experience up front, are going to be relied upon and expected to go very deep into these playoffs and finish with the kind of point totals not seen around these parts since the Pat Quinn era. Omar White is with A Winning Habit, one of our great affiliates here on Habs Fan versus Leafs Fan. So why don't we look at what they announced with regards to the final cut? We know that Borgman made the team. We know that Eric Fier made the team, which is a pleasant surprise for people who had written him off after his injury. What does it say about this Maple Leafs team, guys, that there's so much depth that certain players are starting in the AHL that could even have made it to a major league team? What does that mean? What year is this? It's 2017. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, I think for one, in terms of Borgman, I think what it does is because obviously, you know, like when it comes to like March and April and stuff like that, all like the KHL and the SHL scouts, they kind of go and try to get these free agents to come over. And not all the time, you know, a spot's guaranteed. They can tell them like, hey, you know, we'd like you to be a part of our organization. Come join the team. And not all the time is guaranteed. You know, like Jacob Jerebik's a prime example. Like I'm not going to put any words into like, you know, into the Bergevin or the Canadiens organization's mouth or anything. But I'm pretty sure like one of the selling points on him signing was like, hey, you know, you may have a chance to make the team. You know, unfortunately, he didn't. You know, but obviously, then there's a chance, you know, he can play sometime in the lineup. But like, I think watching Borgman make the team is just like more fuel to the idea that if we sign you from another league and you play well enough to make the team, we'll put you on the team. We won't just, you know, send it down in the minors, which they easily could. And to your point, you know, waivers has played a big role into who's been on the team and who hasn't been on the team. Mm. Kapanen should be on the team. Soshnikov could be on the team. Miro Altonen could be on the team. But they're not because, you know, entry-level deals, they can be easily set down. Whereas, you know, Moore and Fair and that other one, 52, would require waivers to be sent down. So I think it definitely just shows to like the transition and how it's not just within North America where people are finding talent. And obviously, you know, players are drafted from other countries and stuff, but in terms of leagues and stuff like that, you can find talent anywhere nowadays. And, you know, and teams are giving them the opportunity to play.
Is it a tale of two franchises that on the Leafs side, everyone's talking about all this talent that should be on the team, while on the Montreal side, there is a concern that the talent that should have made the team is struggling to do so?
I wouldn't really say struggling, just because, like, for example, like Charles Hudon is finally getting a chance to make the team full-time. You know, I think from all the other prospects who have been playing on Montreal over a couple of years, Jacob De La Rose, he also made the team. About Michael McCarron, Nikita Sherbak, you know, they've kind of been up and down between the NHL and the AHL, and Hudon's been the one who's kind of had the most potential. You know, he played six NHL games before over the course of 2 years and put up 4 assists, but didn't look like he didn't belong, you know, like he fit. And now, you know, ever since training camp started in the scrimmage games and practices, the preseason, he's proven and showed to everyone that he deserves to be here. So there's one, Victor Mete, 19-year-old undersized defenseman from the London Knights made the team. And, you know, obviously you can make the claim, you know, well, you know, if David Slomko wasn't injured, he might not have made the team. But, you know, we're not going to know that. Who cares? The fact of the matter is he's on the team. He's getting an opportunity to play with Shea Weber, which is incredible. You know, it just speaks to how much of a growth you see in him in a year. He was just drafted in 2016 in the fourth round. So the fact that he can push for a spot now is incredible. And then again, Jacob De La Rose, you know, he kind of seem like he was being his normal self, which really wasn't that good at the beginning of the preseason. But, you know, in the later half, you know, he's more engaged. He was more defensively responsible. You know, he was making plays, winning faceoffs and all that stuff, and seemed to earn Julian's trust. So now he's getting a spot over Torrey Mitchell, who we all know, you know, Julian liked Mitchell because, you know, he's that defensively responsible guy. So I do think, even though it seems that, you know, the Leafs are kind of getting out all these opportunities, I feel like the Montreal are doing the same thing even more compared to what we've seen in the past.
I agree with you, Omar. In fact, I mean, you can't expect too much turnover from year over year. So those three youngsters is actually, I think, a success story for Montreal, looking at it as those guys making the team. Omar, I wanted to ask you, what are your thoughts on Montreal's first wave power play using four forwards and one defenseman? And, of course, it's the four forwards being Pacioretty, Drouin, Galchenyuk, Hemsky, and, of course, Weber on the point. What did you think of that setup? Mm.
Yeah, to be honest, I actually did a post over the summer, kind of looking into what the power play can look like, and I actually suggested that they should go for the 4-1. One, because it's kind of seen more among different teams, and two, because it's just a better option. If you have like a stabilizing point man that can hold the line but still be able to get back if anything goes wrong, then you should definitely, you know, use that to your advantage. And then as for the players on it, I like all of them, except maybe for Hemsky. I understand why Hemsky is going to be on there because, you know, he's a very good playmaker. You know, he sees the ice very well and he can set up different plays. We saw that, I think, in the preseason game against Washington. You know, Drouin fakes a shot, gets to Hemsky, cross ice pass to Pacioretty, and it's in the net. So I can understand what they're going to do there. Personally, I would have instead Weber, Pacioretty, Galchenyuk, Drouin, and then Gallagher in the front, kind of like a net front presence, you know, so if there's any rebounds or whatever, you can, you know, swing those home. But either way, you know, last year, Montreal's power play, I think, was at 19.57%, something like that. So, and, you know, goal scoring is obvious, is one thing that, you know, that a lot of people always talk about that that they need to improve on. And I think that power play is going to be pretty dangerous. You know, you have threats all over the ice. You have the dangerous shot from Weber on the point. You have the one-timer option from Galchenyuk, and then you have Drouin, who can just make anything happen out of nowhere, right? So I think definitely the power play is going to be a good thing to look forward to this year.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really important, especially the way they're calling all those slashing penalties. So yeah, Montreal will have a lot of opportunities to showcase that power play and hopefully offset some of their even strength deficiencies, and maybe that power play will help them get more goals per game.
Omar, I'm wondering, Mike Babcock, aka the Untouchable One, has basically been going with Ron Hainsey and Morgan Riley as a 1-2 pairing for the Leafs, followed by Zaitsev and Gardner. And from all the people we've been speaking with here at HVL, that's being kind of received with mixed feelings. How do you feel about that top four for the Maple Leafs defensively starting this year?
Yeah, well, okay. So, well, last season it was, for the most part, actually Zaitsev and Riley playing together. But, you know, there was that really big portion where, you know, Riley got hurt and then he came back, but he wasn't up to speed. And then, you know, him and Zaitsev were just dashes like all season. I think at some point Riley was a minus 33. And, you know, and when Babcock, you know, changed things around and put Gardner with Zaitsev, it looked a more stable and structured pairing compared to when Riley was there. That's not saying that, you know, that Riley was the issue, but I think it's just that Zaitsev and Gardner complement each other better. Now, in terms of putting Riley with Hainsey, I think that's a fantastic idea, because when Riley was drafted, you know, even though he didn't play that well, a lot of people complimented on his skating ability and his ability to handle the puck and skate with it. And, you know, we saw that a lot in the pre-Babcock era, because, you know, there wasn't really any structure to the team at all. Sorry, Randy. But last year when, you know, when Babcock was really trying to round out Riley's game, he got him to be more defensive. You know, pay attention to, you know, to who's on the ice, you know, who's in front of the net and stuff like that. You know, he's not really playing him on the power play that much. You know, just making sure that he's that he was very focused and knew where to be and where to go to. Similar to Kadri in Babcock's first year. You know, he really rounded out his game and made him more defensive. So I feel now that if you pair Riley with a defensive guy like Haindy, he used to be an offensive guy, but has now become a more defensively reliable person. I think that opens up Riley to be more of himself. We never really saw Riley, you know, skate around with the puck, you know, kind of go into the zone, you know, circle around behind the net and throw a puck on the net, and, you know, for a rebound or anything. We didn't see it that much because that wasn't part of his game last year. But I feel like that can be something that he does this year. We even saw it in the preseason game against Buffalo. That goal he scored was Morgan Riley. That's the Morgan Riley we want to see. And I truly feel that him and Gardner, they can easily have like 40 point seasons apiece. So yeah, like obviously Haindy isn't the most attractive option, but I do think looking at the other options on the team, I think Haindy makes the most sense to play with Riley.
Still a hot topic amongst the Habs fans, Omar, is the status of Alex Galchenyuk and whether he should stay on the wing, whether he should be a center, or even whether he should be moved up to the first line. I mean, right now, effectively, he's on the de facto third line playing with Dano and Shaw. What are your thoughts on Galchenyuk in the lineup, and actually, what are your thoughts on Galchenyuk's future?
I got to tell you, Kamal, the future doesn't really look too clear in terms of with Galchenyuk. I honestly thought that even though, you know, Julian and Bergevin said at the end of last season, you know, that they see him as a winger and he's not going to play center, I legitimately thought that was a tactic, you know, like when a line that a coach or GM uses to kind of light a fire under a player and get them to play better. But it looks like they're actually committed to playing him on the wing. Looking at where he's playing, I don't really see it. And this isn't to say that Dano and Shaw are bad players. They're just different kinds of players than what Galchenyuk is. I honestly feel that if you're going to play Galchenyuk on the wing, play him with Drouin and Pacioretty. Like, imagine how dangerous of a line that would be. Like, that would be insane. And I understand the rationale of playing Gallagher there because, you know, you have the person, you know, to get Drouin and Pacioretty the puck, the guy who's not afraid to go into those dirty areas, to take a couple hits to make a play, right? But just Dano, even though he had more points last season, he's a more defensive-minded guy. And I feel that even in the preseason, you didn't really see that much of chemistry between them two. I think actually wasn't line at first, wasn't it Galchenyuk, Dano, and Gallagher at first, after then they changed it up with Hemsky?
So
that looked a little better, but I just don't feel that Dano has the flair, if I can say, to keep up. I know that sounds pretty bad, but I just think that, you know, that Galchenyuk should be playing on that top line. And like the one year he had 30 goals, be it as a center, he was playing with Pacioretty. And Pacioretty knows how to make a play just as well as he can put a puck in the net. So as to the future, I'm honestly really starting to think that they might trade him. You know, I think they look at other options they have in the organization and think that, you know, maybe in another year or two, you know, they can replace him. And, you know, he's not signed for a long-term deal. It's only a three-year extension. The cap hit's pretty not that bad. So, you know, if a team's willing to take a flyer on him, I wouldn't be surprised if Bergevin, you know, answers the phone. So I guess we'll have to see. As it stands now, if you're asking me a percentage of how likely it is that Galchenyuk plays out the rest of his contract, I'm not that confident. I'll say maybe like a 45% chance he remains here.
Wow. And you know what I find curious is that if Galchenyuk really is on the trading block, which I feel that he is, wouldn't you want to showcase him more on a more offensive line to boost his numbers and hence boost his value on the trade market?
Yeah, that makes sense exactly. But I think what it is that wants to win. And I think, like all coaches do, obviously they want to win games, they want to, you know, get points, they want to go climb high in the standings. And I think in his mind, he would rather have the lineup that he wants with Galchenyuk on the third line, then have an opportunity to showcase what he can do. I think in his mind, playing him on the power play is going to be showcase enough. Where, you know, if you're a team that wants skill, that wants offense, that wants someone who can, you know, drive home a one-timer on the man advantage and secure a game, you know, Galchenyuk's a person you want to look for. So I feel that, you know, the lines are set for now. Obviously, you know, 10 games from now, you know, things can change. Maybe that top line doesn't work as much, and you know, you put Galchenyuk up there. You know, you never know. Like a lot of coaches, they throw out the blender, you know, when things aren't going wrong. So maybe if there's like a 3-2 game, and you know, and the Habs really need a goal, maybe they'll throw out Galchenyuk with Drouin and Pacioretty. But yeah, I think because of the fact, you know, that the team itself is very serious, and you know, they're really focused on what they want in the long run, and obviously what they want doesn't really have any bearing on what's going on now. You know, they're looking forward to April, May, June, or whatever. I think he'd rather play Galchenyuk where he feels he can do best, and for now it seems like, you know, playing with more defensively guys in Deneau and Shaw is the best way to go for it.
Omar, to say that expectations here in Toronto for Maple Leafs fans are lofty would be an understatement, obviously. There's real electricity in the air. Everyone is writing about how they're going to finish with anywhere between 110 to 130 points. It's that ridiculous. But that being said, knowing that there are these expectations and knowing that Coach Babcock is a defensively oriented coach, can you see one of either Tyler Bozak, James Van Riemsdyk, and Nazem Kadri not making it through the season because the Maple Leafs may choose to upgrade a position and use them as trade bait?
See, that's actually interesting, because I was having a couple of Twitter conversations with people online about, you know, what did the Leafs do with JVR? And, you know, do they keep him? Do they trade him? So I guess let's break it down first. So between the three, Bozak isn't going anywhere. Why? Because the Leafs don't have that center depth. If you trade Bozak, then either, one, you move Nylander to center, which I'm not sure they want to do until they sign his extension, because obviously, you know, wingers make more money than centers. Personally, I'd rather that they keep him on the wing with Matthews, because that's going to be a dynamic duo for years. So if it's not that option, then, like, who do you call up from Marlies? Like, Colin Greening? Do you give Alton another try? Do you give Adam Brooks a taste in the NHL, even though he's making his pro debut now with the Marlies now? Do you give the GOAT another call? So because of that, you know, there's a lot of question marks. I think Bozak stays because of that. JVR, my sense is that the Leafs aren't going to trade JVR just to trade him. I feel like that's a big thing that a lot of people see. They go on Cap Friendly, they see the UFA status, and they're like, he's definitely gone. And that you know, that usually happens. But you know, I feel that ever since, you know, Shanahan came in, he had his whole plan. What he's always wanted to do was progress. So obviously, last year they made the playoffs. They lost in the first round, but they arguably could have won that series, because, you know, Washington wasn't as, you know, threatening as we thought they would be. But, you know, if they're trending in the right direction, if they're winning games, if they're going to come into the playoffs hot, I can see them keeping him. I can see them keeping JVR for that playoff run, get as far as they can, and then let him walk. You know, because, and it's not, it is, and, you know, some people say that it's poor asset management, but for me personally, they have other players that can replace him. Obviously, not exactly, you know, because JVR, he's a special kind of guy. But, you know, they have wingers up the plethora. You know, like what we were talking before, Kapanen can play there. Maybe Levo, I don't know. Right. Yeah. So they have other options that can fill in for him. And then Komarov as well. Komarov, I think maybe you can trade Uncle Leo. But you know, I think, you know, his value off the ice as well might be another good thing to keep around. But thinking negatively, I guess if things are going south, and you know it truly feels that the Leafs aren't going to be in a playoff run this year, then that's probably the only circumstance I can see them moving them. But as it stands, I think they're all going to stay. I think they re-sign Bozak because you know he's a center, and then Grundstrom will probably replace Komarov next year, and then you know one of the wingers they have in the system will replace JVR.
Well, and I'm thrilled that Kamal is anticipating all the Uncle Leo sketches we'll be doing throughout the course of the year. He's a popular fellow.
I do call him a weasel. I think I hashtag him weasel. Hey, Omar, we were talking about some of the positives coming out of camp with the youngsters, Mete and Hudon making the team. Is it a concern? I mean, we spoke a little bit about them with McCarron and Sherbak, but seeing it being their, I think, third and fourth camps respectively,
yeah.
Is it a concern that they were sent down and didn't make the big club?
Yeah, for me, I'm disappointed a little bit in McCarron. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously it's unfair to say, like, you know, he's a first-round pick and you should be here already. But, you know, he is a first-round pick and he should be here already. and, you know, like, even as low as the fourth line, you know, I feel just that, you know, him and Sherbak, I feel they didn't really do much to prove that they've improved. You know, Sherbak had that one game after he was recalled from Laval, but, like, besides that, you know, they looked very, very lackluster. And it looks like the only way they're going to see NHL time this season is if there's an injury. And it is concerning, you know, because you want to see your top picks, you know, progress. You know, this past draft, you know, with Ryan Poling and Yoni Ikkinen, you know, obviously we're all going to be tracking them. You know, like I'm going to be tracking them. I do Future Fridays on A Winning Habit every week. Check them out. That was a free plug. But you know, it's just like that's definitely an area in terms of those two specifically that you'd want to see improvement. So I think next year, if they come out and there's no growth, there's no drive, there's no energy that we've seen from Hudon and Mete, you know, to make the team, then I think they're definitely gonna have to be a couple red flags. You know, I don't think it's really fair to say that they're bust right now, but it could trend down that way. So, you know, hopefully they have a good season with Laval. Laval looks pretty stacked, to say the least. They just actually made another trade this morning. Delta Zach Redmond for Delorier. Yeah. So, well, we'll see what they do. But they're definitely two players in the system where Habs fans are probably gonna want to keep their eye on.
Yeah, it's funny because if those guys panned out, Sherbak would be a perfect fit as the big scoring winger, and McCarron as, you know, your big third or fourth line center, but
mm-hmm.
it's just not the case.
Yeah, and obviously you don't want to point fingers and stuff like that. Like who do you really blame? Like, do you blame them? Do you blame how they're being developed? Do you blame, you know, the teams they're playing for? You know, like, you know, the AHL team just got good last year. I think they missed the playoffs like 5 years in a row and stuff. Mm-hmm. And obviously McCarron and Sherbak weren't there for all of them. But you definitely have expectations, you know, going for them. I think even Julian said that he was disappointed, and at least Sherbak. I'm pretty sure McCarron as well. So
yeah,
you want to see
There's even reports that McCarron was out of shape. Like, how can you be out of shape for training camp when you're
really?
So much was expected?
Really,
well,
he was
not,
out of shape.
Not out of shape, but maybe sucking wind early in his shifts.
Oh,
like
that's
yeah.
That's pretty interesting because, you know, if you check the Montreal Canadiens Twitter account, all you see is videos of him and Torrey Mitchell working out.
Yeah, that's what was mind-boggling. He worked out spent all summer in Montreal, you know, working out, and apparently the reports were that his early into his shifts, he looked gassed.
Oh, yeah, just hopefully they turn that around because, you know, those are two people that, you know, would benefit truly by being in the NHL every night.
It's ironic, we're talking about being out of shape with our opening sketch for this episode being Joffrey Lupul. Omar, give us your ultimate predictions. You're a friend of the show, and we're going to have you on regularly here at HVL. I'm curious, as Kamal is as well, give us your official Omar White predictions, point totals, and what to expect from the Toronto Maple Leafs and Montreal Canadiens. How far are they going to get in the playoffs? Give us your perspective.
Yeah. Okay. So for the Leafs, I say they'll probably. I think they can break 100 points, and they'll probably finish second in the Atlantic. First is going to go to Tampa because Tampa is just disgusting. How far they go into the playoffs, I think they can win a round. I don't want to say as far as the Eastern Conference Final, but I think they can definitely win a round. And obviously, that's something that the organization wants to see because, again, progress and improvement has been like the main objective of the Leafs organization since Shanahan took over. For the Canadiens, I don't think they're going to have as good as a season as they did last year in terms of points. I do think they're going to be in the playoffs. I know a lot of people think that they're going to miss. I do think they're going to be in the playoffs, probably in that third spot, which means Omar White is calling a first-round Toronto versus Montreal Canadiens playoff series.
Wow.
Yeah.
But you said that the Leafs are going to the second round, so you've already predicted the Leafs will beat Montreal in the first round.
Yeah,
I said nothing. I said nothing.
that's the sound of how
I feel this is a media tactic. You guys are just twisting my words. I did say that that they'll win a round. I did say that they'll face each other. I did not say that that Toronto would beat Montreal. I didn't say that at all. Anyway, those are my predictions for this year.
Awesome.
Good stuff, Omar. So tell our listeners where they can find you and a little bit about what you're working on at A Winning Habit.
Yeah, so, like you said, I'm a site expert for Winning Habit. So, you can find all my content in terms of the Montreal Canadiens there. You can also find me on Twitter at OLW93. I'm pretty animated. And, I just talk random stuff, be it, Leafs, be it Habs, be it any NHL team. And also, me and a couple of my buddies, we started a podcast a couple of weeks ago called the Breaking Ballard podcast. So you can follow that Twitter account at Breaking Ballard. We're probably set to have a couple episodes this week, since the season's coming up. So, and we're looking forward to that. So give us a listen there. Give me a read at Winning Habit. And, I'll probably catch whoever is listening around because me and Ari and Kamal have been pretty good buddies so far, so looking forward to that.
The true power of blue and red friendship. What can you really say about it? It's unheard of, really. We're starting the trend here. Awesome. That is great, Omar. That is fantastic. What do you think, Kamal? Do we have everything we pretty much need and then some, really?
I think we do. I mean, we could I don't know if you want to go into individuals in terms of what, a Matthews or a Drouin could do, but, there's a lot. It's up to you guys.
Actually, let me ask you this, Omar, because I want to include as much of the really compelling stuff. Let me ask you this. Omar, if you were to make a short list of players to look forward to watch for, to see ones maybe do something extraordinary this year, who makes your short list for the Leafs and Habs?
Ooh, okay. For the Leafs, I know the obvious answer is Austin Matthews, but I think Nylander is going to have a breakout season this year. I honestly think that he can hit 30 goals, and not so much because, Matthews is going to get better and he'll be passing him the puck as well, but I think just because his skill on his own has taken a step forward, and you can see that. You can see that he's more willing to engage. His skating has improved. His overall presence on the ice has improved, and I think ahead of a contract year, because that he's the RFA at the end of the season, I think that's definitely fuel to his fire and will help him have a good season. Another player, Morgan Riley, we touched on him earlier. I think he'll have a breakout season and improve in all aspects of his game. And then obviously Patrick Marleau. he'll be on the quote unquote third line with Kadri and Komarov / Brown. And, last season, I believe he had 27 goals around there. So I think he'll definitely, either reach those totals or even eclipse that. For Montreal, Jonathan Drouin, obviously, I think it's pretty incredible how, even though it costs you your best defensive prospect, that you can trade for a player who ends up being your top line center. And obviously he hasn't done that in the NHL regular season yet, but from what we've seen in the preseason, there's no doubt that he'll be able to continue that. and whatever point totals he gets, you know, 60, 70, I think he can get around 70, and I think that'll be great for Montreal as a whole. Charles Hudon, I legitimately think he'll be in the NHL all 82 games this year, you know, barring some kind of injury. And I think, you know, he has the skill. He can put the puck in the net. He has a pretty sick shot. And I think playing with him will benefit Thomas Plekanec, who, you know, who only had 28 points the previous year. So I think his total will go up. And then obviously, and Arturi Luckinen as well. So I guess you can say that through that whole line. You know, last season for his rookie year, he had 18 goals. You know, I'm actually thinking of looking into doing a post on, you know, how he will not have any kind of sophomore slump at all. Because, you know, like, he just proved that he can do it. He can do it all, you know, playing for the Habs. And one thing I definitely hope to see from this year is that he shoots more. He has a very underrated shot. It's not as good as Pacioretty's, but, like, it's a freaking rocket. It's a freaking laser, as some people would say. And, you know, he usually gets, like, those kind of dirty goals in the areas, you know, cleans up some garbage and with rebounds and stuff like that. But, you know, if he can, you know, start shooting the puck, you know, picking his corners and all that stuff, I think he can definitely have himself a good season. And then, obviously, as a whole, the Montreal Canadiens' goal totals will go up and people will stop talking about it so much. So, those are the couple of players who I think can have a standout year this year.
Omar White is with A Winning Habit, one of our great affiliates here on Habs Fan vs. Leafs.